want to ask a question from Slido first. And the first question is already in. Dia kata nama dia Zul. What is the new revenue stream for government in the budget 2020 besides digital tax?
If you look at the revenue figures for 2020, it's actually lower than 2019. And the reason is because we've made our commitment to only have a one-time special dividend from Petronas to pay back the GST and as well as the income tax refunds. So revenue has projected revenue has gone down from about 270 to about 245 billion ringgit. But at the same time, we have sent a signal that we are committed to making sure our revenue base is still stable. So I'm not sure how many of you in this room are affected, but for those who are earning 2 million ringgit and above, their marginal income tax rate has gone up from 28% to 30%.
That's just about what? 2,000 Malaysians?
2,000 Malaysians. We hope to be able to collect an additional 100 million ringgit. It's not big, but I think it's part and parcel of the progressive tax system that we want to have and under the shared prosperity vision. And this was actually recommended by the World Bank. Initially, they recommended a 35% top marginal tax rate, but I think the Minister of Finance was kind enough to say that I think to a revision of 2% is sufficient for now because we do have a pretty good revenue base already. The other areas other than the digital tax would be what we said that we will implement this year, the sugar tax. And there are other tax revenue streams as well. For example, the enhancement of our customs procedures so that leakages arising from the smuggling of illegal cigarettes and alcohol can be reduced as well. So that would be an important revenue stream.
At the end of the day, Doctor, it's about having more to do more. I'm sure when you sit down with YB Lim Guat Eng, there were many more requests that you wanted to entertain. But we've been told for 2 years, you know, we've got to also settle the previous baggages. I just want clarity from you today here, because this is a very petite audience. How far along are we in settling the problem with our finances as a nation, hutang and otherwise, from your perspective and the budget maker's perspective? Will we really clear all those problems by next year, for example, and we can really focus on new page moving forward without any more having to bleed for what happened in the past?
I think issues to do with some of the previous scandals will continue to be managed in a very transparent and also judicious way through different channels. So, for example, the Attorney General is trying to get back money from Goldman Sachs. We are continuing our deliberations with the authorities in China on some of the outstanding projects. So that process will continue. I'm not sure how long it will take, but I think it's more important for us to see that in this current budget, we've already, in a sense, moved on from that because we've projected a somewhat higher budget deficit of 3.2% compared to 3% that was announced last year.
Correct.
And I think this is a signal to us to say that, look, we realize some of the global challenges. We do take note that the government has a responsibility to send the a signal to the market to say that we would be spending where necessary. And I think this is can be seen by how the markets have reacted, how the rating agencies have reacted to say that, look, even if you're spending more now, we trust that your revenue base is stable. We trust that you are handling those past scandals in a way that's very responsible and it's a good signal to be able to send to the market.
So now that the house is clean, what?
Being cleaned. Yeah. Being clean. Yes.
Okay, clean in terms of people cleaning the house. Yes. Can be trusted, credible. Memanglah ada sampah kat bawah kapet, but there will come time for that. But that alone is not enough to ask people to come into our house because there are other houses around the neighborhood, like Singapore, Vietnam. So, from the incentive given, would there already be in your mind specific names or areas where you see this foreign direct investment coming in? I personally like the unicorn part.
Yeah, I think the unicorn is just the tip of the iceberg. Because from the perspective of MITI and also MIDA, what we want is a very diversified portfolio of FDIs that are coming in. we found that our approved FDIs, partly as a result of the US-China conflict, is much higher than Indonesia. Right, so I think we're still behind Singapore, but I think we are definitely number two, or very close to number two in the entire Southeast Asian region. So, for example, investments in the E&E sector, big companies that perhaps late in the past would have thought about just investing in China, now they are coming to Malaysia, including from the US. Many Chinese companies are also interested in coming to Malaysia as part of their One Belt, One Road initiative and also expanding into Southeast Asia. So we see interest in the E&E sector, manufacturers of industrial goods, and also in the services sector. And this is one area where many people may not be aware of. Malaysia is now perhaps in some ways more attractive than Singapore in terms of global business services. In the past, it used to be lower-end backroom services like administration and accounting.
Yes.
But now, they are moving into the higher end, including Industry 4.0 technology, such as cybersecurity, mm-hmm. Detection of fraud, using AI to automate some of their processes. And a lot of these companies are using Kuala Lumpur as their base now.
Yeah. The trade war, suddenly the figures show that the investment coming from America is higher than from China. But we've been visiting China, I think, also quite frequently. You yourself has been there. So how do we not only surpass American investment, but logic dictates that while America is still the leader, but many of new things and the Asian Renaissance and the fourth industrial revolution sides with China because they built it from the ground up. They match it to the needs of their society, for example. Are we and shouldn't we look more towards China to grow that portfolio, not only from the investment, but also on how they marriage that to shared prosperity?
This is where I think I somewhat disagree. Because if you look at the kind of investments that we want to get and are getting from the US, there are a couple of advantages. And I'll talk about China after this as well. One of the advantages of attracting U.S. investments to come to Malaysia is that they are much more experienced in terms of adapting and incorporating the local vendor ecosystem into their supply chain. And this is where I think the Chinese companies have not been in Malaysia for that long. So a lot of things are still being brought in by China. A second advantage that I think the U.S. companies have is that a lot of innovation is still taking place in Silicon Valley. So we do want to attract some of their unicorns, so to speak, to come in to Malaysia. Many of them are in Singapore already, like I said. That being said, on the China side, I think you're right in that they have much more investments in certain areas. For example, electric vehicles. And this is one area where, we may not have the volume and the scale, but we definitely want to see how we can tap into that system, especially under the national automotive policy that's under METI. Other areas that they are good at, artificial intelligence, robots, robotic technology, automation, virtual reality, facial recognition. So all these things are part and parcel of the high-tech industries that we want to get into Malaysia.
While it's good to have foreign technology coming in and learning from them, the debate has been forever, not just this budget. But what is the capacity of Malaysian innovation?
There are many challenges with the SME sector, whether it's on the services side or on the manufacturing side, that has more to do with my ministry. So when we roll out our Industry 4.0 program, we want to give the opportunity for SMEs in the manufacturing sector to sign up for our free of charge readiness assessment evaluation, which will make them eligible for other matching grants down the road. We receive only about 600 plus applications out of a total of 50,000 manufacturing companies. So you really can see the resistance coming from the SMEs. And I think one of the challenges that we face is that SMEs still have the perception that if you want to embark on the fourth industrial revolution or Industry 4.0 for manufacturing sector, you have to spend a lot of money, right? What we are trying to say is that you actually don't need to spend so much money. And the government is there to be able to give you matching grants of, let's say, 70-30% for the manufacturing sector. And we are able to even handhold you along the way. And I know that my colleagues in other ministries, including, for example, MDEC under KKMM, they're also trying to do the same in the digital services sector as well. So one of the things that I'm very encouraged by the budget is that, we have the allocation, $550 million for automation. We also have an allocation for conversion of e-post payment systems. That's also something that's being offered out to the SMEs. In terms of trying to raise the level of digitalization, we have a 30 ringgit sort of like bonus for you to apply for e-wallet applications, right? So this is part and parcel of how we want to grow the e-commerce system.
Maybe Resh Vien is asking what framework will the government use to create 350,000 employment opportunities for youth, and how will the government spend the 6.5 billion for that?
Yeah, I think this was raised by Syed Saddiq, and the 6.5 billion, and I'll answer this question together with the Industry 4.0 question.
Okay.
The 6.5 billion is allocated between different initiatives and different different ministries. And what I think is important is for us to realize that we want to set the framework for the creation of jobs for the future. A lot of people say that, oh, with Industry 4.0 and the fourth industrial revolution, a lot of our jobs will be automated away. And I actually don't see that as a problem. Because this would, number one, be able to reduce our reliance on foreign workers in many of the industries that are considered to be not so attractive to Malaysians. The second reason why I think this is good is because we'll be able to push our workforce into higher value-added jobs that can manage more data, more machines, more technologies, and they will be able to then get paid higher.
How is Malaysia reacting to the 5G technology war between the US and China, and how does it affect our economy?
Okay, there are a couple of ways to answer this. From a consumer and also implementation perspective, Malaysia is open to any companies that can give us technologies that can help the Malaysian industry and also consumer move into 5G technology. So Huawei is one of the players that are much more, very much ahead of the game in terms of 5G adoption and rollout. There are also other players, European players, notably Ericsson, they're also in the marketplace. So, whichever player can come to Malaysia to offer these kinds of products and services at a cost competitive rate, I think the Malaysian government is open to this. So, insofar as the technology war is concerned, we hope that this won't affect our rollout of 5G, which is important not just to you guys so that you can get more faster speeds on your phone, but also important to industry. There's also another area which is important for my ministry, which is to what extent does the 5G technology war affect production of component parts that are going to Huawei output. And this is one area where I'm very concerned about. In a sense that if, let's say, you talk about trade war, it can help Malaysia because of trade diversion. But when it comes to technology war, whereby you stop US companies from providing these services and also outputs, supplies to a company like Huawei, it may reduce overall demand. Okay. And that may affect the E&E sector in Malaysia. But what I'm glad to say is to see that many of these US companies, including some that are active in Penang, Broadcom, for example, I think many of them have ways in which they can negotiate with the US government for them to continue some of their supply chain engagements with Huawei, which is a huge player. And I do believe that the short-term disruptions would be quite minimal, at least for now.
A lot of us are in the M40. And Sam is asking this, regretfully, I don't see much benefits for M40 in budget 2020. There is no tax exemption and lowering of the foreign housing threshold, buying it, make it worse.
For the M40, in terms of the fuel subsidy, I think we're still studying ways in which we can offer some form of card to see whether they would be able to be eligible for some level of fuel subsidy. I think this is still being studied. And I don't really see how lowering the foreign housing threshold makes it any worse, makes the situation any worse, because these are unsold properties,
anyway.
Right? So if, let's say, it won't drive up prices in this particular sector of the market because there's so many houses that are unsold. And if, let's say, you are the middle class, if you couldn't afford to buy property above 600,000 now, having this change in policy would not affect you that much.
This question by Anonymous. Is the threat by India to boycott Malaysia crude palm oil real? If yes, how is the government going to address potential loss of RM 4 billion export to India?
I don't think India is intending to boycott Malaysian crude palm oil. They still need to import a lot of palm oil. Of course, some people have been saying that they may get it from Indonesia. But my ministry, together with Theresa Koch's ministry, the Ministry of Primary Industries, we are having constant engagements with our Indian counterparts to make sure that whatever tariff structure that is being imposed is in accordance with the ASEAN-India Free Trade Agreement. So it's not to say that Indian government can simply do whatever it wants to do. There's got to be some underlying rules that we have to follow in terms of trade agreements. Can I also answer the question? Do we think we should pursue a strong currency policy? The RM has remained depressed for a long while now and contributes to imported inflation. First of all, if you look at the inflation figures, it has not spiked up, even though the ringgit has depreciated somewhat since the general election last year. So to say that this is the cause of imported inflation, I think it's not so accurate. And in fact, the main driver of inflation in the country is actually fuel costs, right? And we've managed to control that in terms of capping it at 208. Whether or not this the inflation rate may be affected by our decision to introduce the targeted subsidies, I think that still remains to be seen. But one of the things that we are trying to do in terms of trying to reduce or make cost of goods more affordable is to increase the level of competition by reducing some of the monopolies that exist within the current system.
Incentive for corporations to pursue sustainable business practices address pollution problems such as that happened in Johor. How about denda dan sebagainya?
Okay, this is a relevant question because some of the FDI applications that we're getting, including from places like China, are in the manufacturing sector that have to use recycled products as part of their raw materials. Of course, we have problems in terms of recycled plastics coming to the country. And here, we want to make sure that we are selective in terms of the companies that are coming in. So actually, some of the companies that are coming in, their threshold of environmental standards is even higher than what we have in Malaysia. Okay. But we have to make sure that our own rules and regulations domestically can monitor these industries to the highest standards of compliance.
It must also be looked upon from the state government because state government have a lot of influence on this. Okay, the budget 2020 is predicated on an optimistic assumption of 6% nominal GDP growth and real GDP of 4.8%. Is this mainly due to manufacturing FDI?
If you look at the composition of the GDP, the growth areas would come from consumption. That would be one. The domestic economy being quite robust. And then part of it will come from manufacturing as well on the production side. Because what we've seen in the past is that manufacturing has gone down to about 22% of the GDP. With the US-China trade war, we hope to be able to increase this perhaps back to at least 25% so that we have a strong manufacturing base that can have other spillover effects into the services sector and continue to grow the economy at a healthy rate.
Time is running out. What is the government plan when creating special channel through InvestKL? What kind of collaboration with China investor is being anticipated to achieve?
Yeah. So basically, if let's say a Chinese multinational comes to KL, they're interested to set up their headquarters here, they're interested to set up an office here, they would contact InvestKL, and then for some of their other related investments, whether it's manufacturing or services, InvestKL would allocate them to the right agency, whether it's MIDA, MDAC, some of the regional investment corridors, some of the state IPAs. So InvestKL plays a coordination role.
Before the host punish me, I'm just going to take three last questions. The budget seems light in the effect where it went up. Sorry, I'm a bit old. Okay, thereby giving a somewhat subdued reaction in the market. Will we see change in the next budget?
Okay, implementation is key. If we can implement the budget in 2020 well, I'm sure that the entire ecosystem, including the capital markets interest, would increase.
The next one is also on government revenue, right? Before, fairly stagnant. So, macam mana nak increase?
As companies make more profits, as individuals also increase their salaries, we'll be able to increase our corporate and also income taxes.
Okay lah, because Zul have been so diligent, I give the last question to Zul. Why lah focus on green energy tech sector when we honestly macam tu, don't have competitive advantage, why not go back to manufacturing which other Southeast Asian nations outdid us?
I'm a bit surprised by this question because firstly, I'm not sure whether Zul realizes we are the second or third largest producer of solar panels in the world. We have many solar PV operators and manufacturers here in Malaysia. If let's say we have so many of these manufacturers here, why not take advantage of this and then build the ecosystem in the green energy sector? And then the other thing is, when you promote green energy, you create new green jobs.
The last thing from me is, at the end of the day, it's about perception. Because I have this problem. Dulu, we do a pre and post sampai sekarang, but the ratings, bila sampai budget speech je, and then bila habis je, naik balik. So people don't really, not unlike the US or UK, where they scrutinize everything. So I just want your views on maybe we should also invest and put more resources in bridging that literacy, financially, budget-wise, or even any other thing, because change is happening very fast.
Yeah, so I think we need to do a more aggressive job in terms of using social media to explain the budget to the people, use infographics, use the material that's been produced by many of the investment banks and also audit agencies out there, and then work with people like SC and also Astro Awani to increase the awareness and also increase the debate on budget-related matters.